soft voice announced. Dan touched the on pad on the phone keyboard, and Saito Yamagata's image appeared before his desk. His round face, usually as jovial as a chubby Buddha's, looked puffy and still half asleep. Sitting on his heels, he was wrapped in a midnight blue kimono decorated with white herons, the family symbol. Sai's getting old, Dan thought, remembering when the two of them worked as construction engineers on the first solar power satellite project back at the turn of the century. Sai had been whipcord lean in those days, and as agile as a kung fu master. But the years of easy living had fattened him, softened him. "Did I wake you?" Dan asked. Sai's old grin snaked across his jowly face. "Does the sun rise in the east?" "You used to be up and around before the sun," Dan said. "And you, old friend, were once a penniless engineer." They both laughed. Their friendship went back to the days when Dan had to use his fists as well as his wits to gain the grudging respect of the Japanese construction crew. Americans had not been welcome on the solar power satellite project. Dan earned their respect by working harder, taking more chances, and fighting better than any of the Japanese. "Times have changed," Dan said.
"They have, and they have not," replied Yamagata. "You always had more than your share of audacity. Calling me before 6:30 in the morning. I'd have the head of any employee of mine who dared to disturb me at this hour."
"I hope I haven't disturbed anyone else." Dan knew that Sai's wife, the eldest daughter of a very ancient and noble family, slept in her own quarters, and that Sai seldom slept alone. Yamagata made an elaborate shrug.
"That is of no consequence."
"Your son as well?" Dan asked.
"Nobuhiko has risen to the position of foreman in our oldest and biggest factory."
"So you must be very proud of him." Unconsciously, Dan slipped into his quasi-Japanese mode of speaking, even though the two of them were conversing in English. He could speak Japanese well enough, although Yamagata's English was much better than Dan's Japanese.
"He is a good son. One day he will take my place at the head of Yamagata Industries."
"Not for many years." Yamagata nodded and shrugged, as if to say, "I will be content whenever the time comes." Aloud, he asked Dan,
"Your solicitude for my family is gratifying, but is it the only reason for calling me at this early hour?"
Dan started to grin, but the recollection of Moloch's smug ultimatum soured him. "I've just had a chat with the new head of the Russian space program."
"Comrade Moloch," said Yamagata, "I have not yet had the honor of meeting him."
"He's raising the price of lunar ores."
25%. "Yes, I know."
"What are you going to do about it?" Dan asked. Yamagata smiled amiably.
"Do? What is there to do? We must pay their price or close down our factories."
"There's got to be something else." Clasping his hands over his round belly, Yamagata lapsed into silence. "Now don't go inscrutable on me, Sai," Dan growled. "There's got to be something we can do to get around this highway robbery."
With a slight shake of his head, the Japanese magnate said, "My old friend, there are some trees that not even the typhoon can blow down."
Dan gave him a disbelieving look.
"Accept the inevitable," Yamagata advised. "It is wiser than destroying oneself by trying to fight what cannot be altered."
"That sounds curiously like the ancient advice to a woman facing rape."
"Accept the inevitable," Yamagata repeated.
"Just let them screw me," Dan snapped. "I'll be double damned to hell and gone before I let them get away with that."
Yamagata's round face took on a sorrowful look. "Ah, Dan, my impetuous friend, in all these years that we have known each other, I have failed to teach you the wisdom of the Japanese outlook on the world. You remain hopelessly American."
"I accept the compliment." With a small wave of one chubby hand, Yamagata suggested,
"Accept instead an invitation. Come here to visit me."
"To Tokyo?"
"To my country estate in the mountains near Sapporo. You need a change of scenery, my friend."
Feeling suddenly annoyed, Dan answered,
"I'm in the middle of a forest." Yamagata raised his voice enough to make Dan silent. "You see one large tree, but you overlook the others. You need a change in perspective, a chance to relax, to be away from the cares and pressures of your office. Join me at Sapporo. The trip will be worth your while, I assure you."
Dan leaned back in his chair and studied his old friend's eyes. Yamagata was trying to tell him something that he would not or could not put into words. Why not? Dan asked himself. because he's afraid of being overheard? Phone calls are relayed by communication satellites. They can be tapped easily enough, especially by the government that operates most of the commsats. "I've never seen your place in Sapporo," Dan said. Yamagata's smile returned. "I acquired it only a few years ago when Nobuhiko became a fanatic for skiing. After living for so many years in Texas and Venezuela, you will enjoy seeing snow once again, I'm sure. Very invigorating." "I'll come out for the weekend," Dan said. Yamagata's eyes shifted slightly away from Dan for a moment. "My computer tells me that I am obligated to appear at a family dinner this weekend. My in-laws," he grimaced. "Come tomorrow. Spontaneity can be very rewarding."
"Tomorrow?" Dan echoed.
"Yes, I will tell Nobuhiko to join us." "You will enjoy 2 or 3 days in the fresh, crisp air of Sapporo, I promise you."
Within his own mind, Dan was trying to translate Yamagata's words into their true meaning. Spontaneity. His estate all the way to hell up in the mountains of Hokkaido. "He wants to talk to me in person, as far away from his office and mine as we can make it, and he wants to meet with me quickly before anybody can arrange to bug our meeting place."
"I'll leave tonight," Dan said, "and be there in time for lunch."
"Good," Yamagata beamed happily.
"I will make the necessary preparations and meet you at the airport."
His image faded into nothingness, leaving Dan sitting alone at his desk once more. For several moments he remained there, silent, unmoving. The butler robot trundled up to the desk.
"Sir, messages for you are accumulating."
"I'll look them over on the phone screen," Dan said.
"Señorita Hernandez?"
she called.
"No, sir, she is here. She arrived 18 minutes ago while you were showering. She has been waiting in the solarium."
"Why the hell didn't you tell me?" Dan snapped. He pushed out of the desk chair so quickly that it nearly tipped over and made his way through the big empty living room toward the solarium. It had originally been a balcony running the length of the apartment when the tower was first opened. But Dan had it enclosed with glass panels that could be polarized at the turn of a dial to go from complete transparency to a dark smokiness that kept the sun's heat out of the room. The glass was all of the highest optical quality, so that Dan could use the squat little astronomical telescope he had set up at the solarium's far end without opening the panels to let in the insects that hummed through the night air. The exotic collection of flowering plants lined the solarium's glass wall, except for the area around the telescope. Dan had originally ordered shrubs and small trees from his native Virginia, in the hope that at least this little slice of his living quarters would bear a reminder of home. But the plants could not face the fierce tropical sun even through the polarized glass. They withered and browned. Dan had them removed, and a botanist from the University of Caracas installed a preciously contrived microcosm of local flora. It was breathtakingly gorgeous. Dan hardly ever noticed it. Lucita was sitting in one of the cushioned wicker chairs dotting the solarium's tiled floor, watching the flaming sunset coloring the sky over the mountains southwest of the city.
"Señorita Hernandez," Dan said, as the glass doors to the solarium slid shut behind him.
Like the airtight bulkhead hatches in a space station, the solarium doors were programmed to close automatically, sealing the air in the solarium from the cooled and dehumidified air of the rest of the apartment. She got to her feet and extended her hand.
"I'm sorry to intrude."
"Not at all," he said. "The idiot robot shouldn't have stuck you out here in this heat. Come inside."
"No, thank you. I prefer it here. I like to watch the sunset, and the heat does not bother me. I thrive in it."
"You certainly do." She wore a simple sleeveless frock of butter yellow that made her look fresh and cool and lovely in the tropical air. Her thick, dark hair was coiled and pinned up off her neck. Dan noticed a single stubborn strand curling down just behind her ear and wondered what she would do if he reached out to tuck it up where it belonged. But he kept his hands to himself and waited for her to speak. Finally, Lucita said,
"You must be wondering why I have come here unannounced."
It was difficult for Dan to remind himself that she was merely a child, especially when he gazed into those wondrous eyes.
"Just the fact that you are here is enough for me. I'm delighted." "You are very gallant."
"And you are very beautiful, Señorita Hernandez." She smiled prettily.
"You must call me Lucita."
"I will. And my friends call me Dan." Her eyes flashed at that.
"What do your enemies call you?"
Laughing.